very much for coming. We've got a good crowd tonight. We appreciate so much your presence. We don't know how far you've come from or what trouble you've gone through to get here, but we're sure encouraged by it. Your presence alone is encouraging us. We hope that that's what you intended. And when you look at the Bible and see people in the first century, when they came together, and we're going to look tonight at the apostles, we've been trying to these Monday night and Tuesday night to kind of look at the apostles and look at the disciples and see what it was like to be a disciple of Jesus and the trouble and the problems and the experience. And I said last night, it's kind of, when you look at it, it's kind of like riding a roller coaster. You almost have to put your seatbelt on because you don't know whether you're going to be at some big feast one moment and be out of food and then be out in a storm and think the ship's going to sink and here comes the Lord walking on the water. And so you don't know what's going to happen. But tonight I want to look at the 14th chapter of the Gospel of John and talk to you some about that. I mentioned last night that the 20th chapter of the Gospel of John tells us why he wrote these things. And if you look at the first 12 chapters of the Gospel of John, you really see the seven signs that demonstrate who Jesus is and how he really illustrates for us everything we need is exactly what he said, I am. And then you look at the 13th chapter, running to the 21st chapter, and you begin to look then at what somebody has called the passion of Jesus. You know, you can tell a lot about somebody by the passion they have for something. Have you ever been to a ball game? I used to have a friend in Louisville who was a Louisville, Kentucky fan, and he would just, if you went to the ball game, you were afraid they were going to throw you out because he was so wound up and so excited about everything, and he didn't mind telling everybody whether they were for the other team or not what he thought about all of it. And so sometimes a bit fearful to be with somebody like that. But when you look at Jesus and you see the passion that he had for the souls of people and the passion that he had for his Father to do his Father's will and how much love he had for them, for his Father and for us, it overwhelms you almost to try to figure out how would I have performed and how am I doing today as I look at these men and see what they did. And so when we start thinking about that a little bit and notice that in this 14th chapter of the Gospel of John, really you have to back up some to the latter part of the 12th chapter where this really, the concepts begin to fall into place as to what's about to happen. In the 12th chapter of the Gospel of John, Jesus is, of course, getting the disciples ready for the fact that he's going to depart from this world. He's going to leave this world and go to the Father. In John 12 and verse 27, there the Bible says, "Now my soul is troubled. What shall I say? Father, save me from this hour. But for this cause came I unto this hour." So Jesus now is getting ready. He knows that his death is going to take place. I mean, really, in this 13th chapter to the end of this account, with just a few hours left in his life on the earth, when you think about it, and so he's getting himself ready. He's not praying that he will skip this occasion because this is the very reason he came into the world. And you think about what that means, that God knew from the beginning of the world, all the history, all the human history went on. When you look at what happened at Golgotha, all things that happened through history, God every day was looking down and seeing Golgotha, knew that one day his son would come into the world, would live among men, and then finally die. And because of the passion he had for the world, he hoped that that passion would be given to them. And you know, sometimes we say we believe that. And you know, in John 14, verse 1, really that's what Jesus is trying to get these men to see. When he could sense he was troubled, and they saw his trouble. But in the 14th chapter, verse 1, let not your heart be troubled. Ye believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you, I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also. And so Jesus is telling these men, he's troubled, he's bothered, and really we see why that occasion is, because he's going to drink this cup. If you remember in the 26th chapter of the Gospel of Matthew, when Jesus observed the Lord's Supper with these men, the Passover, and then he observed the Last Supper with them, that he took this cup and blessed it. Here was a cup of blessing, and this is the cup that we bless, 1 Corinthians the 10th chapter tells us. So there's a cup there in the 26th chapter. But when you go to verse 42, you find another cup there. And this is the cup that Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. And there he's praying to the Father to let this cup pass from me. And he's chosen these men, and he takes Peter, James, and John off with him a little further from the rest and goes off then and tells them to watch and pray. And each time he comes back, you remember what's going on. They go to sleep, and he wakes them up and tells them to watch and pray. And they go to sleep, and he comes back again. Three times he does that, and then he says to these men something that has always stuck in my mind. As I look at this occasion, if I had been there and been one of those disciples, I wonder what I would have been doing. I wonder how I would have fared and how I would have felt about what was happening. And you see that Jesus saying to these men, there are some problems that you need to understand about what we're facing. Number one, the spirit is willing, Jesus said, but the flesh indeed is weak. And so, you know, you can see why when these men see Jesus troubled, he's bothered, he's going out of the world, and he's concerned about what's going to happen to them. And so we see in that 12th chapters, he begins to introduce this idea to them and begin to explain to them what's going to happen. That they sense and see that Jesus has a great weight upon him. He's going to drink this cup that is the bitterness of sin. But now notice down in verse 31, notice it says there, now this is the judgment of the world. Now shall the prince of this world be cast down. Now think about the fact that here we've got these men, they've got these spirits, the confusion about who they are, their flesh is weak, and they're dealing with all the struggles that we all have. We all have these same problems, weakness and frailty, and we don't sometimes perform the way that we should. These men are struggling with that, but they've also got another problem now, you see. We've got Satan on the scene, and as you go on and read this text, you'll find out that when they were sitting at the table, you remember in the gospel accounts when Jesus observed the table, Judas was there. None of them knew who it was that was going to betray Jesus. And so Jesus, when they asked that, who is it? He said, the one who dips will be the sop in the cup. And so he dips the sop in there and gives it to Judas. And still they said they were sitting at the table and they did not know who it was. And Jesus said, you get up and go. What you've got to do, go do quickly. And so Judas gets up and goes out. So we see that Judas has already got his mindset to what he's going to do. And the devil, the Bible says, the devil entered into Judas's heart. So we've got a Satan, you see. We've got this demon. We've got the devil who's present. And we know in the sixth chapter of Ephesians, when you study that great book of Ephesians and see the great plan of salvation and how that we have all spiritual blessings in heavenly or high places. You ever thought about that? And in the second chapter, we're seated with Christ in the heavenly of the high places. Well, when you come to the sixth chapter, you know where the conflict is? We're fighting with Satan in these, not fighting flesh and blood, we're fighting Satan in the high or heavenly places. So there's a spiritual conflict going on here tonight. Your flesh is here. I don't know how tired you are. I'm pretty tired tonight. And so that's working on you a little bit, you know. Maybe you ate too much or haven't had anything to eat and you're hungry. That's working on you. And so there are all sorts of things like that. We all know anything you get excited about, the flesh always, that's one thing great about the flesh is not going to inherit the kingdom of God. I've been to places and I've stood at the Grand Canyon or at Niagara Falls, and I want to sing Amazing Grace, stand there and look at all that and see what God has done. And after you stand there and watch a while, you think, I could watch this all day, but no, you can't. You get tired. You want to sit down somewhere, and then for long you get hungry, and the next thing you want to go to bed. And so the flesh does that to us, you see. We've got that conflict, and then we've got this conflict in the spiritual arena, arena we cannot see. Can anybody see Satan tonight? He's here. He's trying to get into the hearts of people. And if we give him room, Ephesians 4 says, give the devil no dwelling place. He wants to move in, set up shop there. And we've got to make up our mind, he can't come in here. I'm keeping him out. Now, these men are facing with these problems, you see. But then, you know, it's not just those things that is causing this storm in the mind of Jesus to think about what's going to happen. But we find also in these verses, as you watch these men, look at what goes on in the 13th chapter, about verse 21. It says, and when Jesus had thus said, he was troubled in spirit and testified and said, verily, verily, I say unto you that one of you shall betray me. So now we've got these men and they're the disciples of Jesus and they don't know for sure who it is, but they start wondering now as they have eaten the Last Supper that somebody's going to betray Jesus. And so they're starting to wonder, who is it? Look at what's said down in verse 26. Jesus answered, is it he whom I give to sop. And when he had dipped it and dipped in the sop and gave it to Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon, and after the supper, Satan entered into him. And Jesus said unto him, what that thou doest, do quickly. And no man at the table knew for what intent spake this unto him. And so here we are, these men sitting there, and now they all begin to wonder, is it I, is it I? So they start, Peter starts sending a message to John. John, you ask Jesus who it is. Peter didn't want to ask him, so he's the John, you ask him. And so John was trying to, Peter trying to get John to ask the Pharisee, who is it, me or somebody? Can you imagine what it'd be like being sitting at the table there, Jesus saying, I'm going to depart, I'm going to the Father, I'm going to die, and I'm going to be crucified. And these men said, one of us is going to betray him. And is it me? And you remember what Peter said. Peter said, well, I'll tell you what, Lord. I don't know about these other guys, but I'll tell you what. I'll go and die with you tonight. And you remember what Jesus said in the 13th chapter, verse 36. When Peter made that statement, you see, and this may say something about some of us sometime. We have just a bit of overconfidence in who we are and our own significance and our own importance. Because Jesus said, let me tell you, Peter, before the cock crows thrice, you will deny me three times. And so you think about that, and did you notice that introduces the 14th chapter? So now I want you to think about what that says when you look at this. We've got these men who have the flesh, which is a part of the trouble. We've got Satan who is there. And then we also look at the 15th chapter of the Gospel of John. We find some other ingredient that makes all of this the same problem we face today. But in the 15th chapter of the Gospel of John, Jesus is talking about the condition of these men. And in verse 18 it says, in John 15 verse 18, if the world hateth you, you know that it hateth me before it hateth you. If ye were of the world would love his own. But because ye are not of the world, because I have chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hateth you. And so we've got this world, we've got this environment of people around them. So, you know, when you came here tonight, I don't know if somebody fussed at you at Walmart or blew the horn at you driving over here or whatever. Somebody may have talked ugly about you or did something, called you and said something bad to you. We're living in a world where we're being bombarded all the time with all, as disciples today, just like the disciples in that time. We're not of this world, and we're not trying to be of the world. Matter of fact, in the 17th chapter when Jesus prayed for these men that they might not be of the world, he prayed that we might be sanctified by the truth. And so we go, he said, I'm sending you out into the world. I'm not praying you take these people out of the world. God's not trying to take us away from our trouble, but he's trying to insulate us by insulating us with the truth. So you wrap the truth around your mind and around your life, and you go out in the world, and you're not of the world. And so we all, as we go out in the world, we're sanctified by the truth. And what we do, good people, is we try to be, as Jesus and the Father, to be one as he and the Father one. We're working at that all the time, trying to get along. It's hard to give up your will and your way all the time and just say, well, listen, what's for the best of the people of God here? What does God say I should do? And to do that. And so we've got all these ingredients in the picture here about what's about to happen in the 14th chapter when Jesus makes these statements. We've got the flesh involved with these men. We've got Satan involved. And we've got the world that they were living in. And so here we're not in the same sitting, same situation. And I don't know what you've been through or what you faced, but let me tell you, have you ever felt like you were troubled and bothered? What do you tell to people? What do you say to people when you sense that they are crushed and they're broken and they're discouraged? And sometimes it's the world, sometimes it's Satan, sometimes it's my own flesh that gets in my way. And so what have I got to do? Jesus said, do you believe in God? Believe all. Don't you let your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. You know, I think that we all have read that and are convinced that we believe that. I've told this story several times that I read years ago about a man named Blunden, I believe was his name, who stretched a cable across the Niagara Falls and went out there and said he's going to walk across that cable and went out there and asked the people, a bunch of people gathered, said, y'all think I did it? Oh, yeah, you can do it. Yeah, I'll do it. And so he got out there and he walked across that cable across the Grand Canyon. Everybody was amazed. Well, he came back 2 years later and had a wheelbarrow and said, you all think I can go across this thing with a wheelbarrow? And everybody said, oh, we believe it. He said, do you all really? Oh, yeah, they wanted to do it. You know, so they started, we believe you can do it. He said, I've got to have one volunteer. I just want one person who really believes it to get in the wheelbarrow. He couldn't get a volunteer. You see, we say with passion, yes, I believe Jesus. Yes, I believe God, and I know you're his son, and I believe you. But are you willing to put yourself in the wheelbarrow, you see? Are you willing to put yourself on the line somewhere and do something that may cost you something, may hurt you, you may suffer, you may lose something, you see? That's what Jesus is trying to get these men to see. And so when he says to them this statement that we often have read and looked at, that let not your heart be troubled, ye believe in God, believe also in me. I just have thought so many times about this idea that it's easy to tell somebody. Have you ever, I'm studying with a policeman right now who has having a he's been having a lot of trouble because of his job. He's been a policeman for a long time. He's seen all the corruption and all the wickedness in the world. He lives it every day. And so it's finally bombarded his mind, and he's troubled. And so now he's come to me, and he was baptized a month or so ago. And we've been getting together and spending time talking together. And he can't go tell somebody, because if he does, he'll lose his job. Isn't that crazy? Here's a policeman dealing with people, and he's got he's crushed by his problem, but he can't go tell anybody. And so he comes to me. You see, now I've got to keep my mouth shut so he can keep his job. But I'm trying to help him to see as he looks at all these things, all these problems. See, listen, in the world you're living in, your heart's going to be troubled, but don't let it bother you. I was thinking tonight about preaching on Ecclesiastes, the first chapter, and I changed my mind at the last minute, but I was thinking about how that when you look at Ecclesiastes 1, verse 15, the Bible says, you know, in the world we're living in, that he said, if you understand that there are many things that are crooked that cannot be made straight, and the things and all the things that are wrong, you can't number the things that are wrong. You know, you can't straighten the world out. Have you ever thought about that? Have you ever gotten busy trying to straighten the world up, make the world, make everything that's crooked go straight? You'll lose your mind trying. You can't do it. Matter of fact, you can't even count the problems in the world. If we were to, if we were to go around the room and just start a list and say, okay, yes, you go ahead and tell us all the things you see a problem and want to straighten up. We'll write those down here, and we'll just go on over to Don and just go on around the room. Time we got over here, this old boy and got his list. Guess I just thought of a bunch more, and here we go again. And we find out there's no way in the world that we can solve the problems of the world. So why do we worry about that? Why don't we realize in the world we're living in, I can't count the problems and I can't solve them. So what I should do is learn how to live in the world and not be troubled and not be bothered. And especially when I see the storms of life coming, the disciples are sensing there's a storm. Lightning is flashing. The clouds are gathering. Darkness is beginning to gather around Jesus as Satan and his work is coming to what Satan thinks he's really going to win the battle. And it looks dark to the disciples and dark to Jesus. And Jesus said, let me tell you. And when he tells Peter, you're going to deny me. Have you ever thought about what that says? You know, you sense and see through all this. In the 13th chapter, verse 1, Jesus said, those that he loved, you know what he did? He loved them to the end. Have you ever had any friends like that? I've got a lot of friends who love me close to the end, but they don't go all the way. They give up somewhere on me, you know. Jesus loved them to the end. And in the 17th chapter of the Gospel of John, I believe it's verse 24, Jesus said, don't you, Father, I know that you love them as you love me. Can you imagine that the Father in heaven loves you the same way he loves his Son? Here's the love of Jesus motivating him to do, coming to do what he's going to do and trying to get these people to see the passion and how much he loves us, how much he wants to be with us. And so he's encouraging these men to sense and see and understand that. And so he tells them in the 13th chapter about this great love. But what we see in the latter part of the 13th chapter is that when he tells Peter about his problem and these other men, he's already addressed some of their issues. And we're going to see in the 14th chapter, he's going to address some of their questions. They've got all kinds of questions. They're saying, Lord, how do we know the way to go? Show us the Father. If I could just see God, if God would just appear to me in the parking lot when everybody's going night in the dark and say hello to me, I'll be a different person. No, you wouldn't. Because we've already seen. If we've seen Jesus, we've already seen the Father. I've said over and over in my lifetime, I still have a pair of shoes I've been wearing for years. I only wear them when I leave the country. And they have Dexter written on the bottom of them. I'm sure I told you that. And I'll go out somewhere in the bush and get a bunch of people from some other country who speak other languages to sit down and have a translator. And I take my foot and I say, I want you all to think about what, has anybody seen the bottom of my shoe? And I say, no, we don't know what the bottom of the shoe looks like. I take my shoe and I wiggle it in the sand and step on it and push it down real hard. And then I'll step back and I say, now somebody come here and look at that and tell me what they see. And somebody comes and they say, it says Dexter on the bottom of it. I don't know if they still make those shoes anymore or not. But it says Dexter. I said, how do you know? Did you see it? They said, no, we didn't see the bottom of it. I said, how do you know it says it? And they said, we saw your footprint on the earth. You see what we're doing when we trust in God and trust in Jesus? God's footprint is here on the earth. We have seen him walk. How do you know what the Father would do? What would the Father be like? What would he say? How would he feel about you? What would he tell you tonight if you're troubled and bothered and you've been broken in some way? He said, don't worry. Don't be troubled. Don't let your heart be troubled. Don't worry about the way it looks and the way things are. Do you believe in God? Believe also in me. And so when you think about what that says, the last verse of the 13th chapter, when Peter has just been told what he did, do you know what that says to Peter? That when you, have you ever seen people that you can just really be real around? I love people, especially I love hanging around children, because I can be me around kids, you know. Now, around adults, I've got to kind of straighten up a little bit and act like I'm a little bit more proper and got a little more sense than when I get around kids. But when there's some people, you get around them, and they know who you are, and they still love you and care about you, and they tell you the truth about yourself. That's one thing I love about my wife. Oh, she gets me sometimes. But I love the fact that she tells me the truth about things. And sometimes it's a bit painful for me. But I'm going to tell you what, I can be real around her. And I know that when I goof up, she'll tell me, now you goofed that up, now straighten that up, see, and you do better. And I know that's the way. So I love that about her. I know not everybody's going to do that away. But Jesus, you see, is telling Peter, Peter, you're going to deny me before the cock crows. But I'm going to tell you something. Don't let your heart be troubled. And don't you be worried. You believe in God, you believe also in me. So let me say to you tonight what that says is you can be real with Jesus. He loves you, he cares about you. And even though you may have betrayed him in some way or denied him in some way or done something wrong, he cares about you and he cares about me. He is real. And he accepts the way that people really are. He can deal with it. I've often said that God's the only one who can deal with sin. We can't tolerate it in somebody else. We can tolerate it in us, but we can't. But God can deal with everybody's sin. He wants you to come and straighten your life up and be what you ought to be. But he sees you the way you are. He doesn't try to cover up, you see. But now notice, once you see Jesus saying to these men, don't be troubled, don't be bothered. In my Father's house are many mansions. Now think about what that, many dwelling places. And Jesus said, I go to prepare a place for it. And he said, I want you to know that if that were not so, I would not have told you. Where's your confidence tonight about where heaven is and whether you're going to get there or not? Can you see Peter's been told that you're going to deny me? And then Jesus said, let me tell you, Peter, don't be troubled, don't be bothered. In my Father's house are many dwelling places. I've often said this is not the, we sometimes, this word mansion, because it's a word that has been transliterated. And so really it's just the idea of a dwelling place. And what I love about that is when I go to India and other parts of the world, most families are so poor. When your children get married, what you do is you start building onto the house, you see, because they can't afford to build a house. And so the families usually all live around, there's a center room where there's the kitchen and like a big family area, and all the rest of the rooms are built on around that, and everybody comes together at night and they all gather, and they live in the same house. Jesus said, I'm going home. I'm going to my Father's home. And when I get to my Father's home, I want you to know I'm going there and I'm going to prepare a place for you. And let me tell you something about that. If it weren't so, I wouldn't have told you. I would have told you that's not the truth. I'm telling you this so you will know, put your confidence that this is where you're going to go. And here's Peter sitting there. His mind's probably still running over. You know, when somebody says something to you bad, you repeat that 1,000 times, you know. Peter probably missed some of this, you know, because he's troubled by what was said to him. And the other apostles are probably troubled by things that they're sensing and seeing. But we need to take assurance that whenever somebody's in trouble, somebody's broken, and there's a storm brewing over you, and the clouds are gathering, and the lightning is flashing, and it's getting dark, let me tell you, don't let your heart be troubled. Because there is a place. There's a dwelling place for you. And if it were not so, Jesus would have told you. That's the kind of Jesus that we serve. He would have told you if that's not the case. So that's the story that Jesus is telling these men. And then notice he says, when I go to prepare a place for you. And so that says, you know, we sometimes wonder what that might mean. What's he doing right now? But I want to suggest to you that that may have involved not only the fact that he's going to be arrested. He's going to be tried. He's going to be crucified. He's going to be put in the tomb. All these things that he's going to do, you know what they were really doing? They were making a place for you and me. He's going to the cross to prepare a place for me to go. That's the only way I could get there. So when he goes and does what he does, he's making a way for me to go. And showing me, now Gary, if you want to come, guess what you've got to be like me. You've got to find what your cross is, what you're going to face, what you're going to have to do, and you're going to pick up your cross and come after me. And matter of fact, Mark, Luke 9 says we need to do it every single day. Have you ever gotten weary and think, I've said many times, I get tired of being the bad guy. You know what I mean? Preacher always has to be the bad. When people get in a fuss where I am, I get between them, I get talking to them, and I'll get one of the parties together and talk to them, and I'll talk to them about what you're doing and how are you acting, what's your attitude about this. And they'll think, because I'm talking to them about their problem, that they think I'm on the other guy's side. And so they get mad at me, see. Well, then I go get the other person out, and I start talking to them, and I start to know, what are you doing? What are you trying? I don't want to talk about them. What are you doing? Well, these people, well, he's on their side. And so they get together, work it out, and I'm the bad guy, you know. I'm the one on the outside. Well, when you think about trying to deal with people and bring people together and work out problems, you're always going to sense, I think I told you all that I don't want to show you, but I'm missing a jaw tooth back there. I was in the military back in the 60s when the black and white riots were going on in Louisville and other places in the country. And so I went in the military, and we were in a barracks, and the white guys were upstairs and the black guys were downstairs, and we could sense that there was going to be a break and a riot going to break out. We were shouting back and forth. Some of the big black guys and some of the big white guys were kind of taking the lead and kind of shouting down at each other back and forth. And so finally we all came down there, and so the two biggest ones, of course, got face to face, and they started kind of talking and kind of shoving at each other. And so I could see that it was just about ready to break loose, so I thought, I've got to do something. So I stood between these two guys, put my hands on both their shoulders, and I said, wait a minute, fellas. They said, what's going on? What are you doing? I said, wait, let's take one second and think before we start make the next move that we may, in a month's time, be on a battlefield in Vietnam and people shooting at both of us together. Is this the way we want to start that conflict? And about that time, a boy behind me, a black guy, had a wooden shoe stretcher with a bolt stuck through it. He swung around there and knocked my jaw tooth right out of my mouth. And I tell people, you know what I've learned about being a peacemaker? You better have a good dentist if you're going to be a peacemaker. But I want you to think about Jesus trying to make peace between us and God, between us and one another, and the passion that he had for it. So much so that he loved us so much that with these men, in the last few hours, he was not concerned so much about what was happening to him as what it would do to them and where they would be and the trouble that they felt and the trouble that they sensed. And so notice what he says in the next verse. I go to prayer place for you, and when I come again, I'll receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also. Now notice that. That means Jesus is going to come back again. Now you can rest on that. You can put your confidence in that. He's coming back again, and when he comes back again, he's coming back to get you. That's what he's going to do. He's coming back to get me. And when he comes back to get us again, what he's going to do, he's going to take us now, and wherever he goes, that's where we're going to be. Now, I can't begin to imagine what that would be like. I've said quite often, when you look at there was a lady in Madison for years, and she was telling me, about when she said, Gary, I'm afraid when I get to heaven, I'm going to get up there, I'm going to be walking around in a cloud or whatever it is, and I'm going to say something wrong and slip, and the Lord's going to hear me, and a cloud's going, I'm going to fall out and lose my place in heaven. And I'm so afraid that's going to happen. I said, Dorothy, you don't have to worry. I said, Peter said, this inheritance that we have is incorruptible, undefiled, and fadeth not away, reserved, that nothing can tarnish it, nothing can taint it. I said, if you get there, you'll be okay. It's getting there is going to be your job, you see. So we need to see that whatever God has is something that is always going to be fresh, always going to be new, always going to be bright. There will be nothing that will fade. There will be no dying, no death, no disease, no tears. And wherever the Lord is, that's where he said, I'm taking you to be with me. Think about what you're throwing away tonight. If you sit here in your stubbornness and don't believe in God and don't believe in Jesus. But notice he says then, the next verse says, Thomas, when Jesus said, I'm going to the Father, and Thomas says in verse 4, and whether I go, you know, and the way you know, and Thomas, verse 5, Thomas said unto him, Lord, we know not whether thou goest or how can we know the way? So now, all that Jesus has been saying to these men, all he's been telling them all along, now Thomas says, now wait a minute, Lord, let me know, I want to know, where are you going? And how do we know the way to get there? And I want you to notice when he asked that question, that Jesus tells them the answer is, I am the way. And I want to tell you, there's only one way to do it. And that is the way Jesus says. And if we want to alter, we want to argue, we want to go by what we feel, what we think, what our opinions are, let me tell you, you have just finished yourself the course. You're finished up. But if you say, what does Jesus say? Let me read the book. Let me see it. Let me understand what the book says. I'm going to do what the Lord says. And so Jesus said, I'll tell you, I'm the way. That means there's no other way. It is the way. And I am the truth. That means the only thing I know that is true is what I read about what Jesus and these men who inspired wrote in this book. I'm the way, Jesus said. I'm the truth. And I am the life. That means I am dead without him, you see. And so when Thomas posed this question, Jesus said, yes, you know, I'm the way. So you just be like me, you just follow me, you just do what I do, and you're going to be okay, because that's the way to do it. And then notice the next question that's raised. Notice these men, they just keep Jesus trying to give them assurance. They keep trying to find some hole, some loophole, something they don't understand. Philip says in the next, well, let me read verse 7. And if ye had known me, ye should have known my Father also. For from henceforth ye know him and have seen him. Now Philip says, Lord, show us the Father, and it shall suffice us. And Jesus said unto him, Have I been so long time with you, and ye have not known me, Philip? He that seeth me has seen the Father. And how sayest thou, show us the Father? Now notice, here's the picture now. Jesus saying the second. First of all, he said, where are you going? How to get there? Jesus said, look at me. I'm the way. Now he says, we want to see the Father. What's the Father? Jesus said, listen, when you have seen me, you've seen the Father. And that's why I say to you, if we have to say, God, show me yourself, we have not been paying any attention. You want to know what God would be doing tonight if he were here talking to you? He'd be telling you what I'm telling you. He'd be talking to you about what I'm talking to you about. He'd be saying the words that Jesus spoke, because Jesus said, these words are not my words, they're the words of my Father. This is what God would want you to know tonight. He'd want you to believe this tonight. If he were here, that's what he'd tell you. And we know that because it's what Jesus tells us. And then notice what it says in verse 10. Believest thou not that I am in the Father, and the Father in me? The words that I spake unto you, I spake not of myself, but the Father that dwelleth in me doeth the works. Now notice he says, the words I spoke and the works I'm doing, the Father has done those things. So the actions and the words that I'm using are the actions and words of my Father. And verse 11, but believe me that I am in the Father and the Father in me, or else believe me for the very work's sake. Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that believeth on me, the works that I do shall be done also, and greater works than these shall he do, because I go to my Father, and whatsoever ye ask in my name, I will do, that the Father may be glorified in the Son. And now notice, when after he makes that statement, he says in verse 14, if ye will ask anything in my name, it shall be done unto you. Verse 15 says, if ye love me, keep my commandments. Now notice something. What is the labor now for us tonight? What is it we should be doing? Have you noticed through this context, what is the struggle? What is the passion that we have? And where should our labor be seen? It should be seen in how much we are concerned about the commands of God. If I love God, what I should be doing is doing what God said. I shouldn't be arguing with God. I shouldn't say, no, I'm not going to believe that. I just can't see that. Well, I know you can't see it. These men couldn't see it either. They were struggling to understand it. And their hearts were troubled, just like your heart is troubled. And the only way you can ever minister to somebody who's got a troubled heart is to tell them what the Lord said about that. And so he says over and over through these verses, if you drop down and notice in verse 21, he that hath my commandments and keepeth them, he it is that loveth me, and he that loveth me shall be loved of my Father, and I will love him and will manifest myself unto him. And then down in verse 23, Jesus answered and said unto them, if a man love me, he will keep my words, and the Father will love him, and we will come and unto him, and will make our abode, or that's the same word for home, or the house that's made up there in verse 1, or verse 2. And so here's the picture of Jesus saying, you know, we're going to make our home with you. We'll come and we'll live with you. We'll dwell. We'll be in you. And then look at verse 25. I'm sorry, verse 24. He that loveth me not keepeth not my sayings, and he and the words which ye hear is not mine, but the Father which has sent me. So I want you to think about tonight what that says about somebody who here, and you're troubled and you're bothered. You see all this mess in the world. You try to unravel it and make it straight. You can't do it. And you see the mess in your life, and you see that you've got the flesh in you that's working against you, and then you've got the old devil. He's after you. He's going to just do everything he can to defeat you. And then you're living in a world that says, look at all these other voices. Listen, all these other things trying to blind your mind. And so what Jesus is saying in all the middle of all that, if you want to be my disciple, you love me and you do what I say, because I have loved you and given myself. And I'll make my dwelling in you. I'll live in you, and you live in me, and the Father live in you, and you live in the Father. But you've got to do what Jesus said. Now, where would you start with that tonight? Well, when Jesus, before he went into heaven, you remember what he said in Mark 16, verse 15, go preach the gospel. Well, that's what I did tonight. Jesus said, he that believeth, now believeth what? He that believeth the gospel. Do you believe the gospel? It's a decision you have to make. You can flip the switch and say, yes, I'm going to believe it. Or you can say, no, I'm not going to believe it. Haven't been believed, not going to believe it. I'm never going to believe it. Well, you can flip the switch off, and that's the way you can leave it. And God will let you do that. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. Now, the one who's trying to get you to steal your heart and to be calm and don't be troubled is saying to you, can you see how simple this is? You don't have to know everything. You don't have to have it all. You don't have to unravel all the problems of life. I can't do that myself. But I can do what the Lord said tonight if I've never done that. And if you've done that and you've been having trouble, let me tell you, don't you be bothered. You just keep working at it. Don't you be troubled. You might say, well, I denied the Lord. I've done all kinds of ungodly things. Well, give it up and come on home. I was thinking earlier, we were talking about this. Somebody mentioned it today in a conversation about how my children, when they were younger, they remind me of how a lot of Christians are. Every once in a while, our children would come in the kitchen. We'd be in there, and they would get in and open the drawer and pick one of them sharp knives up out of my wife's drawer there in the kitchen, and they'd run off. And I said, come here. Give me that knife. And they'd run off and say, no, no, and they'd keep pulling it back. I said, you're going to hurt yourself. If you're not careful, you're going to fall, and you're going to kill yourself. Give me that. And they said, no, no. And I said, if you don't give that to me, I'm going to hurt you. And then they would finally give it up. But you see, what we do is we hold on to what God says, give it to me. Give it to me. Let go of it. Trust me. Believe what I say. And you'll be okay. If you're here tonight and you need to respond anyway, why don't you come to see me?